kaleidoscope.edu. My name is Emily Wong. I'm a second-generation Chinese-Canadian and first-generation teacher. Kaleidoscope.edu is dedicated to amplifying the voices of Canadian women of color teachers. I'm here, you're here, we are here. And teaching is a great gig. Come join us. Welcome to another episode of Kaleidoscope.edu. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce Catherine Tang. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you, Emily?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. So, since we're still kind of getting to know each other, really, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your current role in education and maybe your a bit of your journey as well.
Sure. So right now I am a grade 7-8 guidance teacher with the Limestone District School Board. So that means that I get to talk to kids about their skills, about their opportunities and sort of look at some potential pathways with them. I work with teachers and with high school guidance, and we are in the midst of course selection right now, which is a new process for me. And so, yeah, that has been interesting. I guess a little bit about my journey, my story, is that what you want to know?
Maybe before we get into that, a little bit more about your past roles, because this isn't your first, job in teaching.
Yes. So in terms of teaching, I graduated from the Faculty of Education in 2011 at Queen's, and then I had gotten onto the supply list in Toronto, but then my boyfriend, who is now my husband, was in Kingston, and so I decided to stay here in Kingston, and I ended up working at Pathways to Education. I had volunteered with them when I was in Teachers College, and so I ended up coming on board with them. I started conducting one of the board choirs, so it's called Young Choristers. So I conducted the choir out in sort of the Napanee area for a few years, and then I also got onto the OT list. So I supply taught with Limestone for a few years. I was working at Pathways at the same time, growing in my role there. And then in 2014, I got my first piece of contract teaching intermediate music.
Cool.
And then, yeah. And then from there, most of my teaching has been in a grade 7 integrated arts program. And so that's where I was for sort of the last few years. And then this year, I'm in this new role.
Nice. So we met, actually, I'm pretty sure, on an On-Ed Mentors
episode. I believe that is. And yes, I think so.
I think at some point we were talking about science, because that was my placement last year in my first year of teacher ed. And so, and you were teaching science as well. So I always associated in my mind as a science person, but as we found out in the pre-chat, we're both choir members, and that's a really big part of our extracurriculars.
Yes.
But it also turns out that we both played clarinet in the band.
Yes. I know. It's so great. Clarinet is great. So actually, I think we had chatted. I think after On-Ed Mentors, we had connected over Twitter. And I sort of, like, whenever I connect with someone on Twitter, I don't just like to follow someone quietly. I generally will follow and then I'll message them. And so we were talking, I think, about grade 7 science, because I was doing this heat unit and you were also doing a heat unit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of, I think, how we started talking.
Yeah, which was really neat. So let's get into the questions, because otherwise this could go on a sort of chat forever. So the first question I have is, I sent you the intro clip to my podcast when I invited you, and you've listened to the previous episodes as well. So what compelled you to say yes to being on my podcast?
Okay, so I love the medium of podcasts, and I just love the conversations we're able to have through it. And so I think I'm always happy to be on podcasts, and I think it gives me also an opportunity to really reflect a bit on my experience and on my next steps, and also specifically with Kaleidoscope, EDU, this conversation around being a woman of color and being an educator in Canada. it was a really interesting sort of niche where I think I could think a little bit more about my career and how it's really been impacted by my past experiences and the communities that I'm a part of. And so, yeah, I think I was excited to be part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for taking this jump or this risk and coming on. So
thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So speaking of your sort of past experiences and how your identity might be sort of related to that, I want to ask, what was your formal schooling experience like, kind of K-12 and post-secondary?
Okay, so I grew up in Scarborough, Markham, and I went to public school. I remember very distinctly, I was fairly studious. I was a pretty good student, but I always consistently got level twos for listening. And this was like the prevailing comment in parent-teacher interviews. It was like, Catherine is a good student, except she's a terrible listener. So that was sort of a little black mark on my record. But I actually did grade one and grade two in the same year. After grade one in December, they were like, okay, you can just move to grade two now, which was very strange. I don't know why we did that. But and so I did that. And then in grade four, I ended up being part of the gifted program in York Region. And so I moved to a different school. And I did that sort of from grade four to grade 10. And I remember sort of in grade six, grade seven, I came to this realization that there were a lot of my peers who were very marks driven, and I was less marks driven. Well, probably because like I wanted to be, if I couldn't be the best, I didn't want to take the risk and not be the best. And so I just sort of pulled back and tried to be good at something else. And so I think that clouded my academics a little bit. And in high school, I was very heavily embedded in the music department. And so that was a big part of my time there. And then post-secondary, I ended up going to Queen's University for concurrent education. And I studied sort of a double major in psychology and music.
Nice. Knowing what you know now, I'm curious about the Catherine is a poor listener comment. I'm just, you know, if you were your own teacher, if you could go back in time and sort of think about how you were as a kid, mm-hmm. and knowing what you know now and your sort of philosophy in education, I guess if you taught yourself, what would you do to sort of address that issue that your teachers identified as an issue?
So it's funny because I actually taught a student who I think was very similar to what I was like as a student. And then seeing it from the teacher's perspective, I was thinking, I could understand why my teachers would make the comments that they were making. I think I was just someone who I had a lot of questions, and I didn't necessarily have an outlet to explore them. And so I was just constantly talking because I wanted to work through things. And so I think for me, something that helps is sketchnoting and journaling and having a space where I can mull through a lot of those different thoughts. I think helping kids to rein in some of those different, it's good to be excited about things. And I think that's part of, you know, making connections, but being able to actually harness them and put them down on paper so that you can continue to refer to them instead of just like throwing them out all the time and mm-hmm. hoping people are listening.
Mm-hmm. I think we're a lot alike. more than just the choir and the clarinet
and the
you know, I think we're a lot alike in terms of we probably both think a lot. And you know, you externalize your thinking, and I don't know that I do, but I do find that, you know, journaling and different things like that to externalize my thoughts to get them out of my head is really helpful, I find.
And I think something kind of going on this whole listening thing, something that just happened today was I texted my husband and I said, there's freezing rain coming tonight. And he was like, yes, we talked about it this morning. And I was like, oh, really? Like, I don't actually remember this conversation. And I think that something that happens a lot is that maybe there's, you know, something running in my head. And so I'm not really attending to things that I'm doing sometimes. And so I think this is something that I can work on. And I think it does take practice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's lots of, we are all works in progress, which
exactly.
I'm pretty sure is something I'm stealing from somewhere. So I'm going to ask my next question. Mm-hmm. When did you first start thinking that you wanted to be a teacher? And what was the response of your circle, kind of your family, friends, community, when you started sort of working towards that?
Yeah. So my mom actually she's a retired teacher now. She retired like 2 weeks ago. And so she was a teacher. And so it was always on my radar. I remember going to school with her on PA days. I remember in grade three, I like walked the picket line with her. I would, you know, do her charts. And sometimes like when I was older, she like let me mark her spelling tests. And so it was always something that I was thinking about. And my family obviously was really supportive of it. I come from a family of teachers. Like we have everyone who is not teaching in the public school, I feel like, is teaching piano. So like my grandparents were both teachers. My uncle is a teacher, like, and my sister's a teacher. So I think it really just, it ran in my family. This experience. So yeah, I had lots of experience working with children, like through church and through choir and camps and stuff. So I think a lot of people expected me to go into teaching. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's probably where our experience differs a little more.
Yes.
I think I have two kind of related, very sort of extended family. Extended family members who are teachers, actually in the Catholic system here, but that's it. And so it's just interesting to, I mean, part of this podcast I'm now kind of realizing is my own desire to kind of reach out and find role models in a way. Mm-hmm. For myself, because I'm, you know, pretty young. I am very early in my career. And as much as teachers are role models for their students, I think that more experienced teachers are role models for more early career teachers. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that the responses when I kind of first started seriously thinking about going into teaching were quite different from yours, but that's okay. It's, you know.
And I think I did hear a little bit about your story when I was listening to some of the other podcast or some of your other episodes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how does your identity as a woman of color influence your interactions with your school communities, whether that's students or colleagues or students' families?
So I guess to give some context, I grew up, my public school education was in York Region. And so in a lot of the elementary schools that I was in, I was a visible minority, but I didn't really feel like a minority. And so I think that also helped me to be a lot more assured of, you know, my identity as like a girl who's Chinese. And I also had this sense of value in the community that I belong to. And so moving to Kingston, I teach in the Limestone District School Board, and most of my teaching has been in Kingston. According to census, it's over 90% Caucasian. And so a really different context than what I had grown up in. I remember when I first started supply teaching, this is before I got married, so my name was Miss Lee. And there was another woman who I actually know, she was a supply teacher as well, and her name was also Miss Lee. And I remember students coming up to me and saying like, oh, you taught me here, you taught me here. And I'm like, I've never been at this school before. And I don't think it was, no, it's of no fault of theirs either. I think it was something that I realized, is that there wasn't a ton of exposure necessarily to teachers of who are visible minorities. And even now, like I think I could probably count on my hand how many like East Asian teachers there are in our board. And so when I think about that, I mean, I recognize that there might be students who, you know, especially those who live further away from the city center, who haven't had much opportunity to interact with people who don't necessarily look like them or who have grown up like them. And I don't think it necessarily affects how I act, but it's something that I'm conscious of, because I don't want to, you know, I don't want there to be sort of this implicit bias against those students. And I think something that I've learned is really using my story to connect with my students and to build some understanding. Like this year, when I started going into grade 7 and 8 classes, I sort of introduced myself a little bit. And one of the first things I would tell students is that I was born in Hong Kong and I grew up in the GTA. And I think students now are like, they're very curious about it. And it's not from a place of malice. They just want to know a little bit more. And so I think building relationships with students so that they can see some of the differences, but also the similarities that they share with you has been really powerful.
Hmm. I'm very conscious of my, I guess, ethnic or racial identity. And I realize now that I do bring it in to the classroom when I'm teaching and when I'm volunteering. I think because my connection to China is really through my grandparents, which was the China of the 1940s, the 1950s. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have any connection to what is China today, whether that is culture or language. And I'm here in Ottawa, and there is also not that high of a percentage population identifying as people of color. It's only 23% at the last census, which surprised mm-hmm. me. And the percentage is even less so in the school boards, among staff in the school boards. But during my placement, I did a lesson for my grade 9 geography class, a lesson on Chinese Canadians and their sort of history in Canada, because there are different waves of Chinese immigration mm-hmm. And immigrants who have come to Canada for different reasons and different sort of political changes relating to that. But I think that is, you know, it's personal for me. And so I bring it in, because part of my just experience and perception is, you know, the restaurant days in the 50s through to probably the 1980s in Canada, many Chinese immigrants worked in the restaurant business. They had stores and that kind of thing. And that is to some extent a perception that I guess lingers.
Mm.
And so
do you feel like that's a perception that you have of yourself or that other people have of you?
I'm not really sure. I think for some reason it's something that I'm hanging on to. It's interesting too, even when I was creating the lesson, I learned a lot about the kind of trend in immigration, and then it was sort of, I'm glad I shared it with my students, because I'm not sure, I guess, where else they would get that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think this opens up an interesting conversation because even though, you know, the two of us are Chinese, I think that you and I have also very different narratives, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we also have to recognize, that any person of color, you may share a culture, but your individual story is also different. And I think it's important for us to communicate that to our students as well, is that, you know, there is not necessarily one story of all Chinese people in Canada. There's not one story of, you know, all Pakistanis in Canada. There's a different story for every person. Like, there are probably some trends and some themes, but I think that connection is really what's important. And to be able to talk about some of those differences and similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think even going back to the classroom, I know, like as Kingston becomes more multicultural, I think it's really empowering for students who are visible minorities to see that diversity reflected in their teaching staff. Just in the same way that, you know, in any of our classes, we try to use texts in which students see themselves represented. And I think that it's something that I'm sure like all boards are working on, just to make sure that the staff that are teaching their students, you know, reflect the diversity of the population that they serve.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And it's interesting to see how that, I guess change is slow in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see how that may or may not be reflected even in teacher ed programs. That's my context. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, who I see most of the time is teacher candidates. And I think, you know, I don't know. I haven't been in the field long enough to really tell. Sometimes I think maybe it is changing. Sometimes, you know, you sit there and count.
So I'm curious.
I don't know.
Do you see that diversity in your, like in your cohort?
So my cohort of 35 people, there are, I believe, six of us who are sort of people of color. But I want to say that my cohort, I believe, is one of the more diverse cohorts. If you put us all together, all of the second year teacher candidates, I'm not sure what the sort of ratio would be. I imagine lower than in my particular cohort.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. For the sake of time, I would really like to get. I would really love to get to my next question.
Sure.
Which is, now that we've spent some time thinking about the past and the present, I want to ask, what are your hopes or your vision for Canadian women of color teachers?
So I think, sort of wrapped up in this question, I think my vision and my hope is not necessarily just for women of color, but really for anyone who identifies as a minority, you know, be it their religion or their orientation or their upbringing. And so I guess my hope would be that they see the value in their personal story, and that they use that story as a way to build compassion with those around them and also among those around them. And just that they take opportunities to connect, not just with those who are like them, but also those who are different. And I'd say that's my vision. Nice.
And what is one thing that educators could do tomorrow or in the near future to really move towards this vision?
So this is a little bit of an aside, but I'm in a book club, and right now we have this theme where we're looking at marginalized voices and maybe just trying to hear stories that we don't necessarily get a lot in the mainstream. And I think that the one thing that all educators could do is to really hear and understand stories that are different from your own. So that might be, you know, reading a book that's written by an author from from a marginalized community or about, you know, a topic that you don't know a lot about. You might be listening to a podcast that really stretches your thinking, or maybe from someone who has a very different opinion on a particular issue as you, or even just talking to someone that you haven't really gotten a chance to know very well. I think those connections and those stories are really what's going to drive like more than just tolerance, but like understanding and appreciation and ability to sort of raise each other up.
Mm-hmm. Since you've used this idea of stories a lot mm-hmm. throughout this episode, and I can sort of see it in just the way that we've been talking about connections to each other, understanding each other, and even understanding each other as individuals. I am going to ask for a story for the funniest thing that a student has said to you in the past week.
Oh, okay. The funniest thing that a student has said to me. Okay, so this is a little bit tricky because I'm not in a typical classroom. So I've been doing a lot of like one-on-one meetings with my grade eights, which for the most part are quite serious. but I can sort of say a funny thing that happened was I was at a school and the kids are coming in from recess. And because I work with the 7-8s, I like when I get to interact with the younger kids. And so there was this one little girl who came up to me and she was like, look what I have. And she held up this stuffy and she's like, I have a narwhal. And so it was just so funny because then there was a kid beside her and she was like, oh my goodness. And it just became this thing that this girl had a narwhal and like the narwhal story and how she got the narwhal. And it was like very all encompassing. And I think I love those moments where I get to, it's like so random, but they bring a lot of joy to my day.
That's super cute. But was it a narwhal?
It was a narwhal.
Good. Cool.
Yes. And she like, I got this at, my mom got this for me. I think she got it. It was like a stuffy from the dollar store or something, but she like loved
That's
it
so, cute.
So much.
That's so cute.
Yes.
It's like, when, you know, little kids, all they want to do is play with the box. So one day, I don't know, maybe I'll just give my little cousins a like refrigerator box. I don't know. A refrigerator box.
Those are very great. I have a 3-year-old, almost 4, and we like keep a lot of our cardboard boxes. There was one that we just sort of disassembled and we turned it into a boat. Ooh. And it was like, it was a very thin boat. Like I couldn't sit in it or else I would just like completely break it. but yes, it was, cardboard boxes are wonderful.
Yes, they are. Well, this has been a very lovely conversation. I'm going to come back to the serious stuff just for one last question. What advice do you have for any women of color out there who might be considering a career in education?
So I would say that the field of education is really large and that there is a lot of opportunity to teach both in the classroom but also outside of the classroom. And so don't be afraid to take on some of those opportunities because you never know where it might lead. After graduation, like I didn't get onto the limestone supply list right away and I ended up in a different job. And then I find now in my grade 7-8 role, I'm using a lot of the skills I learned in that job. And so, just be open to opportunities and be true to your story.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Catherine, for this conversation. As a last check, how can listeners get in touch with you?
Yes. So the easiest way to get in touch with me is just to find me on Twitter. I am at EduScribblings, E-D-U Scribblings. I like created the Twitter account when I was in teacher's college and it is what it is.
It's part of your brand now. So there we go. EduScribblings. And keep a lookout for your new podcast. Do you want to plug that?
Yes.
For 5 seconds?
Sure. Sure. So my new podcast, it's called Becoming, and it's pretty much as you can tell, I really like stories. So I'm pretty much just asking people to tell me a little bit about who they thought they were going to be when they were little, or who they thought they would be when they grew up. And then we just sort of track through their life and see where they are now and how they've really become the person that they are. So first episode launches on Monday, February 25th. And yeah, it's going to be good.
All right. Awesome.
Okay, real talk. I didn't realize starting this podcast just how deeply personal this project would get. I mean, I knew I would be sharing my story and asking others to share their stories, but I don't think I understood how that would affect the flow of a conversation in quite the way that it has. Catherine's thoughtful responses and her own questions for me, they threw me. I edited a lot of stumbling out of this episode. At times, I felt very vulnerable, like I was working out some deeply personal identity stuff on the air. I continued the conversation in private with several trusted friends, and I'm happy to say that I have arrived at a point where the vision for my podcast is recalibrated and reinvigorated. I am clearer on what I want this to be, and I'm really eager to come at it from this different perspective. On to the next episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of Kaleidoscope EDU, amplifying the voices of Canadian women of color teachers. I'm here, you're here, we are here. Cheers.